There are a couple main themes I want you to pay attention to this morning as I talk. Not only will I be talking about mental disease, but mental health. We're going to look at the Casey perspective on both of those because we need to have a sense of balance here and not just focus on what disease is. And beyond that, we're going to focus on that because Edgar Casey gave hundreds of readings on all sorts of forms of mental illness and how people work with that and the therapies for it. So we're going to focus on that aspect. And my training is a lot in that area. I have a degree in clinical psychology, as was said, and I've worked extensively in public mental health in a program that is the requirement to get in is that you have to have a diagnosis of psychosis. And psychosis is the kind of the worst form of mental illness. It's being out of touch with reality, like schizophrenia is one of the psychoses. And so that's part of where I'm coming from, just in working with people with those sorts of problems. And I want to give you the information that Edgar Casey gave on that. And what's interesting about that, that's kind of another theme. Joseph Campbell said, the schizophrenic is drowning in the same waters in which the mystic swims with delight. So that's another sort of theme to pay attention to this morning. You may not have one of these mental illnesses. You may not have a family member or a friend. You may not be a health professional. So that aspect may be more of kind of a curiosity to you. But if you're a seeker on the spiritual path, then this other theme, mysticism and mental health, will probably be more relevant to you because there's something about when you get into on the spiritual path and you start working with creative energies, sometimes called kundalini, and raising your vibrations, so to speak, there's actually an overlap here. There's a tendency sometimes for some people to get a little out of balance. And by the way, that's what illness is, by and large, is out of balance. And Edgar Casey often used that term in speaking of people with mental illness. He said they're unbalanced. So the idea of keeping a balance, and particularly if you're on the spiritual path and you're having some of these mystical experiences, where is the line? Where is the line? And when I was out in California, one lady asked me at lunch, she said, yeah, I wish, you know, that thin line between mysticism and madness, I wish that thin line were a little wider. And so I took the time to explain where that line is, and it's a very clear line. It's not a thin line. It's actually a very definite line between mysticism and madness. So I'm going to explain that to you so that if you're on the mystical path and you start having some of these psychotic experiences, hearing voices or being out of body or precognition, these are the kind of things that the people in the mental health system where I work, that's why they were taking medication. And you all come and pay good money to learn how to do that stuff at these conferences, right? Some of you do anyway. So that is one of the themes, where that line is, how to stay on the healthy side of the line and keep a balance. Do we have any mental health professionals here? Okay, good. Should be interesting. I'll get some good questions, won't I? One of the things you can ask me about, I don't know, I hadn't planned on talking, but now it occurs to me, if you want to ask me about how you work with this in the mental health system as a professional without losing your job, I'd be glad to give you feedback on that, because that's another thin line, isn't it, in terms of how to work with metaphysical principles and spirituality, because sometimes that's seen as part of the illness. And one of the programs where I initially worked doing my practicum, the clients were forbid to talk religion in the day program. If they started talking any kind of religion, they were out the door. If you talk, that's part of your illness, you can't talk religion. And so how to have this spiritual background and work with people with these spiritual, a lot of times metaphysical problems without getting in trouble yourself or being thought to be a little crazy yourself, that can be a challenge. So if you're interested in that during the question and answer periods, be sure and ask me. Okay. These are some of the main symptoms of schizophrenia. So we'll define our terms here. If we're going to talk about schizophrenia, what is schizophrenia? Well, in the broad sense, again, it's a psychosis. It's out of touch with reality. And what does that mean? Well, it could mean delusions, and delusions are thought patterns. It's the way you think. The way you think is out of touch with reality. And what does that mean? Well, for instance, one of the most common delusions is to think that you're God or think that you're Jesus. In fact, I'm told there's a psychiatrist in Jerusalem that has focused his whole practice as especially just on treating sort of Christian pilgrims that come to Jerusalem, and while they're there, they may be perfectly normal or whatever, I mean, normal, healthy people, but when they somehow they get there and get in that energy and get into the bigness and the grandiosity and everything, then they start to believe that they are Jesus. And there's enough of, this happens to enough people that there's at least one psychiatrist there, apparently, that bases his whole practice just on treating people who, when they get there, and then he has to sort of bring them back to reality, in a sense. Now, what is going on there? Maybe they're having a mystical experience. Maybe they get in touch with something so far beyond themselves and so powerful and so grand that the best explanation they have is that I must be Jesus to be having these experiences. Maybe that's what's going on. I've had four Jesuses in my practice here, a couple of Edgar Cayces, at least one Mother Mary, and another famous people and so forth. So this idea of delusions. Now, there's other kind of delusions, like paranoid delusions. The CIA is out to get me, or FBI, or something of that nature, or everybody's out to get me. See, it's a way of thinking. Your way of thinking, most people look at that and they say, that's crazy. You're out of touch with reality. That's not real. But to them, it's real. Very real, I assure you. So that's delusions. Hallucinations have to do with more with perceptions or sensory phenomena. So it's not thinking, it's sensing. You're seeing or you're hearing or you're tasting or you're feeling something that most people would say, that's not real. It's out of touch with reality. And the most common one for schizophrenia is hearing voices. And there's a saying, you know, when you talk to God, that's prayer. If God talks back, that's schizophrenia. Okay? You ever had that experience? The still small voice, is that hearing voices? We're going to talk about voices after a while. I'll tell you about my voices, some of the different voice phenomena I hear. And again, we'll talk about that line between when it gets to be pathological. But hallucinations. Now, the visual hallucinations, sometimes, or the feeling of things crawling on your skin and other kind of things, some of those tend to do more, when you have that, you tend to be more indicative of like an organic disease or a toxicity in your body. And we'll talk about some of the different things that can cause these kind of symptoms, but just to let you know that. Peculiar behaviors, very eccentric sort of things. Sometimes I can walk down the or I can drive down the street, and I don't work in the mental health system anymore, but I can almost pick out some of my ex-clients, so to speak. And I'm not talking about stigma here. I'm just talking, sometimes peculiar behaviors are things, once you're aware of that, they really stand out as the way people conduct themselves. But it can be like collecting trash or doing little idiosyncratic things that are part of their belief system that helps them to cope with reality. Lack of initiative, not wanting to get out of bed, low motivation, not wanting to work a job or to be consistent about anything, that's fairly common. Sometimes that's a side effect of medication as well. At blunted and inappropriate emotions, and just sort of maybe being kind of dead to the world in some sense. And again, some of these, it's hard to tell because they overlap with the medications we're taking now. Now, there's some other symptoms. Those are pretty straightforward symptoms. There's some other symptoms which I find kind of fascinating. Again, we're getting to this realm of the mystic and so forth. And this is from the psychiatric manual. This is right from the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, used by psychiatrists to diagnose mental illness. And under schizophrenia, you also have odd beliefs or magical thinking, such as superstitiousness, belief in clairvoyance, telepathy, sixth sense, etc. Okay? Isn't that interesting? That's from the psychiatric manual for diagnosing schizophrenia. Also, unusual perceptions, such as sensing the presence of a force or person not actually present. Anybody ever have those kind of experiences? Any of these? I'll hold up my hand. I have. Are we schizophrenic? No, probably not. And here's that quote again from Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell's a mythologist, philosopher. And so when he looked at all the great wisdom traditions and philosophies through the ages, mythologies, this was his observation about schizophrenia. There's a fellow named Gopi Krishna who's a Hindu. And Gopi Krishna, for years, he did deep meditation, what's called Kundalini Yoga, which I'm going to talk about later. But he didn't have a guru. He didn't have a system. I mean, he was sort of winging it on his own. And that's the way I did it, by the way. And that's not the way Edgar Cayce recommends doing these sort of things. But he did, and he had this Kundalini awakening. And it actually caused him some pretty major problems for a few years, kind of getting his balance back from that. So he's written many books about this, and I find it very interesting, but he observed that there's a close relationship between the psychotic and the mystic. In a mystic, there's a healthy flow of prana, this life force energy, the kundalini, into the brain. And in the psychotic, the flow is morbid. In fact, the mystic and the psychotic are two ends of the same process, and the ancient traditions class mad people as mad lovers of God or something divine. So you get a real sense of the mysticism and the madness there from Gopikrishnan, don't you? And he's talking from firsthand experience. Now, what are some of the causes of schizophrenia? Heredity would have to be near the top of the list, just because there's been so many studies done to show that, you know, does seem to be something going on in the genes. And we know this because it's not necessarily just environment, because even identical twins that are separated at birth and raised in different environments, there's still a very high rate of schizophrenia, up to, say, 40 or 50%. Now, it's not absolute, so that tells us there's something besides heredity going on, just because even with identical twins, identical genetic material, if one gets schizophrenia, the other one at best probably has maybe a 50% chance. So there's something else going on, so we need to keep that in mind. It's not absolute, usually. But heredity, birth trauma, there's been a number of studies to show when women have difficult births, they're called pregnancy and birth complications. And particularly in Europe, they keep very accurate, and there's a long history of records of these sorts of things, you know, in social medicine and so forth. So they've gone back and they've done studies, and sure enough, when there are certain types of pregnancy and birth complications, there's a very much greater chance of a person having schizophrenia. And Edgar Cayce, by the way, Edgar Cayce talked about heredity and schizophrenia. Absolutely. I can show you cases of that. He talked in a number of cases about birth trauma, that there's an injury to the spine. And you'd think there'd usually be an injury to the brain. You think schizophrenia is a brain disease, so the brain must have been damaged. But most of the time, it's an injury to some other part of the body, the tailbone or the back or maybe the neck or the abdominal region or something. And this is a common theme. It's not just in pregnancy and birth complications. When you look at, there are many, many readings on psychosis and other types of mental illness. Most often, even though it ends up in the brain, to be sure, but the original cause is somewhere else in the body, in the glandular system and in the peripheral nervous system, there's something going on. And there's reasons for that. By the way, it's the spiritual centers. I'll cue you in. Okay, it's the chakras, it's the spiritual centers, it's the one-third of our nervous system that's outside the brain. It's called the enteric nervous system. It's in our gut, and there's little brains scattered all through the system, and that's the reason for that. And that's why in birth trauma, those are very susceptible to being injured. Glandular dysfunction, and again, those of you who are from the Cayce tradition, we think of the glands, particularly the endocrine glands, as the spiritual centers, also called chakras. So you can see how some type of problem with the glands. And if the glands is how the soul is manifesting through the body, if you're having problems with your glands, that might affect how your soul is able to incarnate and maybe having problems connecting in through the body. You see what I'm talking about? A spinal injury I've mentioned, and we'll talk about osteopathy was one of the most common treatments for schizophrenia and mental illnesses in general because of what I just talked about with how pressure on the nervous system out along the spine can affect our mental status. Infectious disease, such as viruses, this is one of the theories that is out there now more commonly among some of the researchers, that's sort of like a retrovirus. We talk about AIDS being a retrovirus. Well, it's not AIDS, but there may be some other form of infectious process like that going on in some cases of schizophrenia. And then finally, stress, primarily as a secondary cause or a trigger, probably more so than a primary cause. There's a model in schizophrenia and many other conditions. It's called diathesis stress. And the diathesis refers to that hereditary or genetic predisposition or some other kind of predisposition that makes us vulnerable to an illness. And the stress is a trigger then, and you need both of them to make it happen. That's why I was saying, even if you have the genes for schizophrenia, sometimes you need a trigger. And one common problem, okay, a trigger is something that makes it happen. Let me give you some examples so you understand. One of the common patterns in schizophrenia is that the illness manifests during late adolescence or, you know, like late teens, early 20s. That's the common time. It can occur at almost any time in your life, but that's the most common time. And that can be a very stressful time of your life. You're leaving the family, you're going out on your own, you have to in the world by yourself, and there's stress associated with that. And sometimes going away to college and having the stress of an academic load put on you, and having to take care of yourself maybe for the first time. And that's one of the stressors that's sometimes associated with this pattern. And I've seen that with a number of our people in the program I was in, that going away to college put people under stress. But maybe they already had a predisposition for it, see, and the stress just sort of triggered it or kind of kicked it in. And Edgar Cayce had a couple readings for schizophrenia where they ask, you know, was it because of the stress of going to college and stuff? And he says, yes, that was part of the stress and strain. He used that expression, stress and strain, that triggered it, but there were other things going on as well, and so it was more complex than that. So looking at heredity as a factor, even heredity, we think of heredity in genetics with the Human Genome Project and all that we're hearing so much about, the genetics. If we understand genetics, we're going to cure all these diseases and understand all this. And Edgar Cayce said that karma is oft of hereditary conditions, is cause oft of hereditary conditions, so-called. Then indeed does the soul inherit that it has builded in its experience with its fellow man in material relationships. So even something that seems so biological and material as genetics, maybe there's a metaphysical aspect to it. Not a big surprise to most of you. I mean, the idea that the soul chooses the parentage that you come into. Now, there was another slide I sometimes use, and someone said, do I inherit mostly from my parents or my grandparents? And Cayce said, you inherit mostly from yourself. The family is just a river through which the soul flows. Isn't that a poetic way of putting it? So we choose these situations to be born into. We have some choice in the matter so that we can have not only the heredity but the environment that will cause us to face ourselves and grow and meet ourselves. Fascinating, huh? Now, I've got a fairly extended excerpt here on schizophrenia. Now, Cayce called it dementia praecox because that was the medical term most often used in his time. Dementia is significant because dementia means a deterioration of the brain. And Edgar Cayce, when he talked about this, he was clear that there was a softening of brain tissue. Over and over he would say that. So it's not just sort of like a psychological thing. There's a biological aspect to this, and that's been confirmed in medical science now. When they do brain scans of people with schizophrenia, there's lots of evidence to show that something has deteriorated in the brain. So dementia praecox means precocious or early. So instead of getting this dementia in older age, like Alzheimer's dementia and that sort of thing, this is precocious dementia. This means early on in life we have some of the same degeneration of the brain. And Cayce says in this reading, 281-24, through pressure upon some portion of the anatomical structure that would make for the disengaging of the natural flow of the mental body through the physical in its relationship to the soul influence, one may become dispossessed of the mind. Thus you say rightly, he is out of his mind. There's some words there that I want you to pay attention to. Some pressure upon some portion of the anatomical structure. So when I talked about like spinal injuries and some of those sorts of things, very often Cayce would take it back to that and say, go get some osteopathic treatment. You've got pressure on some of these centers, and that's affecting the flow, the disengaging of the natural flow of the mental body through the physical. So we've got a mental body that's flowing through these centers, and if there's pressure on that, it disengages and the mental body gets disrupted, and so the soul, particularly the mental body of the soul, cannot fully connect into the physical centers. Do you see that? And then the dispossessed of the mind, this idea of possession, that somehow possession may be part of this process. He goes on in that same reading to say, where there are certain types of disease, there is the lack of the necessary vitality for the resuscitating of the energies that carry on through brain structural forces of a given body. So again, we're coming back to the brain structure and saying, yes, it has something to do with our biology. Thus disintegration is produced, and you call it dementia praecox, by the very smoothing of the indentations of the brain. So it is brain degeneration he's talking about here. And finally, he says, such then, these people with this dementia praecox or schizophrenia, such then become possessed as of hearing voices because of their closeness to the borderland. Many of these are termed deranged when they may have more of a closeness to the universal or God than one who may be standing nearby and commenting. That's us mental health professionals, you know, and family members. Yet they are awry when it comes to being normally balanced or healthy for their activity in a material world. Some key words again, the possession word. If you're interested in possession, ask me about that and I may talk about it. Possession is not what most people think. And possession, when I did my study in schizophrenia in the Casey readings, there were 5 readings that recommended the violet ray, which is a form of static electricity, and all 5 of those cases, when I looked closely at them, involved discarnate possession. And so there's a pattern there. It doesn't explain everything that's happening, but that's one of the factors that can influence why someone's having these experiences, possession. Again, the closeness to the borderland. Casey talked about how there are levels to reality, and you find this in many of the mystical traditions, that there's sort of layers in reality, and these different, particularly in the Hindu and in the Buddhist traditions, they give these big long names that you can't pronounce much, you know, you kind of go blank when you look at them, these different layers. Well, Casey talked about this in terms of the borderland, was this one of these layers very close to the earth, and that particularly discarnate entities that are sort of trapped in the earth and not quite fully released when they die hang around there. And so the idea that we can tune into that borderland or that in-between state and pick up things or be influenced by that, that's what he's talking about here. And that these people are termed deranged or mentally ill. And actually, they're closer to the creator and the source in terms of these layers of reality than we are, but they're awry. They can't quite function in a physical world. And that word function, I want you to pay attention to that because that's the line that distinguishes level of functioning. And that's what he's saying here. When it comes to be normally balanced, see that balance again, that's how he's defining health. He says, no, they can't quite function in a physical world. Now here's a case example where he talked about we find the action of the brain itself to be that of dementia praecox. That is the softening of the tissue of the brain. So he's talking about brain degeneration. In another case, he said, we would put the body under the care of such as the Still Hildreth Sanitarium, Macon, Missouri, the low electrical forces that may be used in connection with the osteopathic corrections and the change in the environment for the care and the personal attention that will be given will also contribute to the better physical and mental conditions of this body. Now, the Still Hildreth Sanitarium was an osteopathic sanitarium. So when I talked about earlier about how these manipulations to relieve the pressures that are disengaging the mental body, his preferred way of doing that was through the osteopaths. And noticed he talked about the environment and the personal attention. He said Still Hildreth was a very spiritual place. And in talking with the people who know about that program at the time, it had that aura of spirituality and the personal attention and care of the soul as well as the physical body. The Still Hildreth Osteopathic Sanitarium was an old military academy that they converted to a mental health hospital. The osteopaths did this. And it was a beautiful, opulent sort of place. And it was a little on the high side as far as expenses. I mean, they charged a fair amount. And sometimes Edgar Casey would get letters from people saying, you know, I don't know if I can afford to go to Still Hildreth. But he kept referring people there. And he really seemed to think it was a wonderful place to go if you had this kind of problem. They had, you know, again, all sorts of indoor, outdoor facilities just for a person to almost like a spa in a way. I mean, to come and rejuvenate and relax and be accepted and get all these treatments and get the spiritual attention as well. They had their own farm and dairy herd and, you know, organic gardening and so forth. They had, they did the PACs. They did the full range of physiotherapies that you see in the Casey readings. So they did hot and cold PACs, and here's their hydrotherapy department. And they noticed that many patients have a history of long-continued constipation with evidence of auto-intoxication. That means the toxins in the body, instead of being eliminated, are being absorbed back in through the colon and so forth to cause toxicity in the body. For it, our main reliance is colonic irrigation, by which the colon is thoroughly cleansed by large quantities of normal salt solution. So if you go up the hill here at the health services and you get a clonic irrigation, you think, wow, this is some crazy Casey therapy or something that Casey made up. No, actually, he was just tapping in to the sorts of things that the osteopaths and other practitioners were doing during his time. And this was one of the standard treatments for people with mental illness to get them cleaned out. Yes? Okay, is osteopathic treatments very different than chiropractic? Yes, very different. And I gave a whole talk on that at a Sillamar, almost two lectures actually on that. And if I have a chance, I'll comment on that as we go through what the difference is. Yes?
I noticed all the chairs up there were all rocking chairs. Why?
I don't know. May have been the room they were in. I mean, that may have had to do with that room, because I'm sure in the other rooms they weren't all rocking chairs. I don't think they were off their rock or anything like that, if you're trying to draw a metaphor. Okay. If you hold just a second, I'm almost through here with the slide part, and then I'm going to turn the lights back up, and we can have question and answers. Okay. Now, Robert Miller, who is deceased now, died a couple years ago, was an osteopath that Edgar Cayce actually made a referral to in one of the readings. He was over in Richmond at the time, just beginning his practice. In fact, there was some discussion whether or not they would hire him to be the physician at the Cayce Hospital. And one of my senior buddies, osteopaths, said, no, you don't want to go over that's crazy stuff. You don't want to get involved with that. And so he turned it down. He says, you know, my life would have been entirely different, because his claim to fame is that he had a referral from Edgar Cayce, and a lot of the attention and so forth he got later on in his life. I mean, people make the pilgrimage up to his house just to chat with him to see what he was doing. And that's what I did when I first came out here in 1990 from the Midwest. One of the first things that I did was to go up to Kilmarnock, about, you know, an hour and a half up the road, and visit him and get a treatment from him. And it was eye-opening. Just getting that one treatment totally opened my mind as to what Cayce was talking about with osteopathy. And he actually offered to take me on as a student. He said, I'll teach you, if you'll come up here and live for a few months, I'll teach you to be an osteopath. But I just moved to Virginia Beach and didn't have a job, and my wife and daughter were here, and I didn't feel that I could take off and do that at the time. But again, I wonder, if I had gone that route, where would I be today? Kind of curious, isn't it? Now, he actually did his training, some of his training, at the Still Hildreth Osteopathic Sanitarium. So he was in that area, he worked, and he thought about going into psychiatry as a form of osteopathy just because he enjoyed working at that institution so much. Fascinating man. Now, looking at the holistic treatment of schizophrenia, one of the ideas I want to get across to you, a couple of ideas. The material in the Cayce readings on schizophrenia, and this is true of almost everything. This is true of the other mental illnesses. It'll be true of the chronic diseases we look at this afternoon. Almost everything you find there has been validated to some extent or other. And so, in looking at the holistic treatment of schizophrenia, the spiritual aspect of that, because it is a holistic model, the spiritual aspect, the therapeutic environment that Edgar Cayce talked about was so important. He said, while you're doing this rehabilitation process and while you're regenerating the nervous system, the person will constantly take in the environment. And whatever is in the environment, that's what's going to get programmed back in. It's sort of like hardware and software. When you're regenerating the nervous system and rebalancing the glandular system, that's the hardware. And he said, whatever's in the environment will get programmed in, almost like hypnosis. And he said, if there's gangland stories or movies, you know, violent kind of stuff, that'll get programmed in. You could end up with a Frankenstein here instead. You know, you could end up with somebody that's on the destructive side by the programming of the environment. So he said you need a very positive, constructive environment around the person. And that's in the psychiatric rehabilitation model that I was involved with here. That was probably one of the biggest factors, was creating that sense of community, of connectedness with others and support and positive relationships, and that healing aspect was very important. That was probably one of the most important things. And that's called, the technical term is therapeutic milieu. That's if you look in the psychiatric literature. But Edgar Cayce talked about the importance of environment, and that's why he was saying when you go to Still Hildreth, you're going to get that, because that's part of their environment. Companion therapy, in order to make sure that this person stays with the program, so to speak, in terms of the therapies, and they don't get into trouble, don't hurt themselves or other people, he said, have a constant companion, somebody with a unity or a Christian Science background that has the idea of positive thinking that will have, you know, help to rebuild the mind in that way. And in the mental health system here, we had a companion therapy program. You know, we actually, that was one of our ways to help keep people out of the hospital, because they were cutting back on the hospital, the state hospital, all the time, getting people out in the community, out of the system, into the community. And to have someone with someone, particularly if they're going through crisis, is part of the plan. And I'll tell you, I'll let you know right now, after 6 months of being in the program, I didn't want to do this too soon, but after about 6 months, I took a copy of my book on schizophrenia and gave it to my supervisor. You know, holistic treatment of schizophrenia based on the Edgar Cayce readings. I didn't want to give that to him right when I started, because I wanted to show him that I was not kooky or far out or anything else. This relates to the question of how do you do this if you're a professional. And he, a couple months later, he gave it back and he said, you know, what you've written about here in your book is exactly the direction we're heading with our program. And he went on to say, Beach House, which was the name of the program where I was, he said, Beach House is a very spiritual place. And he started talking about spirituality and the importance of spirit in the healing process. So isn't that fascinating? That's part of the psychiatric rehabilitation, the psychosocial rehabilitation model today. So Edgar Cayce was right on with that. And keep in mind that in Cayce's time, what was available? If you didn't go to Still Hildreth or someplace like that, you went to a state hospital and it was little more than a prison. I mean, the people were treated horribly. They were locked up and abused and so forth. And so this is the contrast. And so we've come a long way since then, and actually we've come in exactly the same direction that Edgar Cayce was recommending. With regard to the mental aspect, he talked about various things. He talked about various cognitive therapies, but one of the most common was suggestive therapeutics, where you give hypnotic suggestions while you're getting a massage, while the person is falling asleep for the first few minutes, while you're getting adjustments, or while you're using the wet cell battery. He said, give these positive affirmations to reprogram the mind. On the physical side, it was the manual therapy, the use of the hands for treatment. Could be osteopathy, massage, sometimes chiropractic. Sometimes he did recommend chiropractic and neuropathy and other forms of manual therapy. The electrotherapy was most often the wet cell battery, which I'll talk about this afternoon, a chemical battery, he said, that could help to regenerate the nervous system along with some other modalities. And then sometimes he recommended medication, particularly if the person was acutely psychotic and dangerous to themselves or others. He would recommend pretty strong sedatives, some of the most strong medications that were available during his time. So he was not against medication necessarily. And you'll remember those readings where he would say, you know, whether the healing comes from the drugs or the knife, or in other words, surgery, or the laying on of hands or prayer, if it's true healing, it comes from the divine within. So we'll keep that in mind in terms of treatments, because that's a real common question with regard to these mental diseases. Do you use medication or not? Is medication inherently bad? And Edgar Cayce, no, not necessarily from the Cayce perspective. We'll take 5 or 10 minutes and do some question and answers, because I know you do have some questions. And I could tell you some stories. Would you like to hear a couple stories quickly about, particularly on this theme of mysticism and mental health? One of my first experiences, I was fascinated by schizophrenia. I always have been fascinated by schizophrenia, this idea that it's sort of like a window into the soul. So like the soul is laid bare, and all of that socialization and defense mechanisms and all that stuff that we layer over to kind of hide ourselves and protect ourselves. People with this kind of problem, it's just like strip that away, lay the soul bare, and there it is, for better or for worse. I mean, that's the way it is. And that, you can just look right into the soul very often, and it's so direct. And not only that, these people tend to be very psychic. I've had people come up to me, people with this diagnosis of schizophrenia, come up and actually read my mind, read my thoughts, and talk to me as if they're talking to my thoughts. I'm not talking. I'm just standing around thinking about something else. I'm not thinking about my job or whatever. My mind has wandered, and they come up and start talking to my thoughts, and they don't know the difference. They start talking to me as if they're conversing with my thoughts and expect me to reply as if I've been saying this. I've had that happen. And Edgar Cayce gave a reading for a woman that was having this kind of experience, and he said, you're like a human radio. And he said, thoughts to you are as real as sticking a pin in. That's how real. Thoughts are real things, he often said. Well, to this person and to some of the people I work with, thoughts are real things, just as real as sticking a pin in your skin. I've the first one of the first experiences I had with psychic experiences in my training, I was in my practicum and I was making the rounds with a psychiatrist in a hospital on the psych ward. We had a woman come in and sat at the table and had just come into the program. And she had just, a few weeks earlier, she had came in from California to Illinois, where I was. She sat down at the table and asking the questions and taking the history. At one point, she said, "You know, Doc," says, "back when I was living in California a few weeks ago, my voices started telling me that I was going to move to Illinois. And I wasn't planning on moving to Illinois, but something happened that caused me, so I had to come here and live with a relative. And back in California, my voices told me that when I moved to Illinois, my case manager, when I got here, would be Mrs. So-and-so, Mrs. Johnson or whatever." And she said, "You know, Doc, here I am in Illinois, and guess what? My case manager's name is so-and-so. Am I crazy or what?" And he said, "Yep, you're crazy." And increased her medication. Okay? I'm sitting there, and I've had, I'll tell you a little bit later about some of my mystical experiences, I've had precognitive experiences. Your view of what's reality again. See, if you're out of touch with reality, what's reality? And if precognition is possible, if it's real, then that redefines psychosis. But from a mental health perspective, you start talking like that to a psychiatrist, and, you know, they'll get their pad out and start writing you a prescription. I've had experiences with people where it was pretty clear to me that they were having reincarnational bleed-throughs. We had a couple people in the program that looked like they could have just walked right out of a Civil War picture. You know, those Civil War pictures, the beards, and I mean, they're here in Virginia, and this is Civil War country, to be sure. But and sometimes this one fellow would come in, and he would be all hysterical almost, talking about some terrible violence that's going on out in the parking lot. And people are being blown up and, you know, and on and on and on, this terrible stuff. And as I listen to it, and just don't dismiss it as being psychosis, this is his illness, and he's getting psychotic again, but I listen to the content, he's describing a war scene, and it sounds kind of like a Civil War battle scene. So we go out in the parking lot and do a reality check. No, there's nobody out there. We reassure him, you know, it's in his mind, it's not really happening physically. But again, there's a part of me, what do you do in a situation like that? Do you validate the psychosis? You know, if this individual is drowning in the mystical waters, do you take them out deeper in the mystical waters, or do you try to bring them back to shore? And in the psychiatric rehabilitation model, we're going to try to bring them back to shore. One of my coworkers used this expression, which I thought was beautiful, and she was coming from this more of a metaphysical tradition too. She was aware somewhat of this side, and she said, "You know, what we're trying to do here is to invite these people back into the dance of life. Back into the dance of life, because they're out there. They're in the borderland. They're connected somewhere else, and we're going to invite them back in." And I could go on and on about some of these experiences. I've had some experiences where it's pretty clear the person was possessed at the time. Something was going on. If you happen to accept the reality or the possibility of discarnate possession, as Edgar Cayce was talking about there, I've seen it where there was such a dramatic change in what was coming through this person. Now, I've seen multiple personality. We've had some cases of that in our program, and I've seen it elsewhere. So it might be something like that, but very well could be something like discarnate possession as well. So I've seen many of these types of experiences on a day-to-day basis, and I'll talk about more about this when I talk about bipolar disorders and kundalini and some of those experiences as well. So it's a fascinating thing to me. Again, it's like the soul is laid bare here, and you're just looking at something, and you feel very privileged and honored. And it's such a sacred thing at the same time with what you're doing. You just want to, you want to try to help this person, but you also realize that they're doing something for you. And that it's part of my healing and my growth to be aware of this when I'm in that situation. So I've got about maybe 5 minutes, so we can take a couple questions here.
How do you judge success in treating these people, and what is the success rate?
Okay, how do you judge success? When I was in California, I gave a whole lecture on multidimensional healing, and we have this model in our research program, the six forms of healing. Cure, which is the way most people think of healing as cure. Put me back the way I was before I got sick, but don't make me change anything. But there's other forms. From a medical perspective, almost all illnesses are incurable. Just look it up in any textbook. They don't know the cause or the cure. What they do is care. That's another form. That's helping with symptoms and quality of life. We were very much into measuring symptoms and quality of life, and we even talked about empowerment was another form of healing. Now, Wayne Jonas, a medical doctor who used to be head of the Office of Alternative Medicine at NIH, he identified four forms of healing: cure, care, empowerment, enlightenment. And I wrote a nice article for our newsletter in the mental health program, and I talked about this. And again, the supervisor of the program really loved it because we're not curing these people, but yet we're doing something good here. There's a positive outcome. And what is it? Well, they're growing. They're empowered. We would use that term, empower these people to take back some of the power and be responsible for their lives and responsible for what's happening and quality of life and so forth. Enlightenment and soul development, even more, and I saw a lot of soul development going on. I mean, if this is really, I mean, at a certain point, I began to kind of change my idea of what was going on here. Because very often, these people were teaching me and helping me to heal with my imbalances. And it occurred to me that what we were trying to do was to try to get them better so that they could come back and join the rat race with the rest of us. You know, in terms of what is reality and what is this really about? Is it really about soul growth and returning to the source, that we are souls making our way through eternity, finding our way back to our source? And is this part of the journey back to the soul, or back for the soul's journey back to the source? And the material things that we're so into, can we get them back to have a job, and can we get them back to be sort of normal? Maybe it's not quite that easy. Maybe it's something else going on. When I'd see one of these people walk up to another member, we call them members, not clients or patients or anything, but a member in this program, and it's toward the end of the month, and they're living on $450 a month for everything, and a lot of them have strong addictions to like cigarettes and so forth, and they only have two cigarettes left, and they've still got a week to go before their check comes, and their buddy says, or even somebody they don't particularly like, whatever, comes up and asks for a cigarette, and they give them a cigarette, or give them their last cigarette. There's something that happens there. It seems like a trivial sort of thing, but at a soul level, that connection and that empathy and that generosity of spirit that does that, when these barriers are broken down and so forth, there's something very beautiful about that. And I would see those little things as being like little miracles, you know, very powerful things, and those are positive outcomes. So how do you measure this? It's not easy, but I like to use a multidimensional model. There's a lot of ways of looking at how we can grow and be healed.